Greetings, this is Jeff Jewell, Monday, May 18, 2009. This is Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. I'm flying solo today as my wife and co-host Diana is fighting a flu bug. The title of this program is Lessons from the Tragedy of BCS-TV. As this is a recorded program, there will be no opportunity for audience participation. We also note that this and all of our programs are posted on our website, from which you can listen online or download. Our website is Truth Talk Online, that's all one word, truthtalkonline.blogspot.com. I repeat, truthtalkonline.blogspot.com. Okay, the question of electoral reform has been laid to rest, unfortunately, probably for the next 25 to 50 years, with the crushing defeat of the referendum on electoral reform on Tuesday. So today's program will examine the lessons from the tragedy of BCS-TV. Let me first begin with a song that seems fitting in light of the demise of STV and the hopes that so many of us had for it. Ah, yes, my friends, those were the days when electoral reform seemed a real possibility. In fact, it seemed really to be within our grasp based on how close it came in the first referendum of 2005. And we thought, or at least many, I think, in the Yes campaign thought that because it came so close in the first run, that this time it should be easy to get the extra 2% roughly that was needed to make it a reality. And we thought we would have the life we'd choose, and we thought we'd fight and never lose. And yes, I guess as the song said, we were sadly, in the political sense, young, and we believed that we were sure to have our way. But then, as the song said, the busy years went rushing by us. We lost our starry notions on the way, and just tonight, nothing seemed to be the way it used to be. We're older, but no wiser, for in our hearts, the dreams are still the same. For those of us who wanted electoral reform and did what we could to promote the cause, we still have the same vision, but we must now accept that there's no realistic chance within the lifetime of most adults to see another opportunity for a referendum on this. So we'd like to review in this program just what the background was, how we got up to these lofty heights. And let me begin by playing a clip from the BC Citizens Assembly website of 2005. There's an enormous wealth of material there, both video and text material, thousands of documents, literally.
British Columbia has become a world leader in involving citizens in public policy development. When our province created the Citizens Assembly on Electoral Reform in 2003, it was a historic event. Never before had a democracy given randomly selected citizens so much power. The 160 members of the Assembly were all volunteers who were randomly selected from the voters list. These 80 men and 80 women came from every area of the province and all walks of life. In addition to the 160 members, the assembly was chaired by Jack Blaney, former president of Simon Fraser University.
This is historic. And that's why a lot of people around the world are watching us. It's historic because never, ever before in any democracy in the world has a government given to the citizens, ordinary, in quotes, citizens, unelected citizens, an important public policy question to consider. And then after considering that, make their recommendation straight to the people of the province. And that's what's happened here. Here we have ordinary citizens who I think became, through the process, quite extraordinary, remarkable people. And in the end, of course, their decision, their recommendation, will go straight to the people of BC, unfiltered by government. No government has ever taken that chance before.
The Citizens' Assembly was given a unique and important job. Learn and make recommendations about the way our governments are elected. The first stage of their work was to study and examine electoral systems used in democracies around the world. They met from January to March of 2004 to hear from experts and learn about different voting systems. 50 public hearings were held during May and June 2004 in communities throughout BC, allowing assembly members to hear what their fellow citizens had to say. Over and over again, they heard British Columbians say that the values they felt were most important in an electoral system were fairness or proportional representation, effective local representation, and voter choice. Then in the fall, after studying 1,600 written submissions from the public, the members reconvened for another series of meetings, this time to come to a decision. Based on all they'd learned and heard, the Assembly agreed overwhelmingly to recommend to British Columbians that our province adopt a new electoral system. That system is the BC Single Transferable Vote System, or BC-STV, a system designed by the Assembly specifically to meet the needs and political values of the province.
There was a lot of dissatisfaction that we picked up around British Columbia with politics, not just the electoral system, but with politics generally, the climate of politics, the way politics is conducted, and the sense that I think many of us had is that the same feelings exist all across the country. You're seeing exercises similar to this in a lot of other provinces, and there's some discussion about a similar kind of exercise taking place federally as well. So people are turned off politics for a number of reasons. One of the reasons is that the electoral system kind of distorts the vote and results in artificial majorities. In the 96 election in BC, the party with most votes did not get elected. In the 2001 election, the party that won a majority of votes won an overwhelming majority of seats, and 42% of the people were represented with only two seats. So it's sort of like a funhouse mirror. It distorts the outcome, and people are upset about that.
The STV's single transferable system is eminently more fair. Fair in the sense that the voter is able to express his preferences in a much more meaningful way than the other systems that we've studied. In particular, the results will be a more proportional or a more fair distribution of seats to the Legislative Assembly. But a real bonus here, I think, is that it improves the control of the voter. The power has gone back to the voter. He chooses the candidates. He chooses candidates within a party. The party no longer dictates in a particular riding who you're going to vote for. You can vote among the candidates of that party. I think that's really powerful. It holds the candidate totally accountable to the voters. And I think that's very positive.
But I think there was an overriding feeling in the Assembly that they wanted to lessen party control. And the single transferable vote is a candidate-based system rather than a party-based system.
Well, I think British Columbians looking at change have to look at the fact that democracy is not static. I think we have not put a lot of investment in democracy itself, and our society is changing rather dramatically, and I think that we have to look at an electoral system that is going to represent those changes.
But the reality is we've constantly been changing. I mean, originally, only white male landowners could vote in BC. The franchise gradually expanded to include all white men, to include minorities, to include women, and to include different religious groups. So we have constantly been adapting and changing. And the thing is that the change happens because society has changed. Changing the mechanics of an electoral system is merely in response to the new needs that are in society.
We have a great system right now. first basketballs are single-member plurality. It has served us tremendously well. Simple, easy, everyone is so familiar with it. But it's like everything. We have reached a stage, time to evolve, time to move on, time to improve. We're in a new century. So we have to look what can serve the people of BC best at this time and also for the future. When you decide on a system, it's not for tomorrow, 5 years. You try to project 50, 100 years. God be willing.
The fact that this BC Citizens Assembly was such an historic and unprecedented situation was totally lost on most of the citizens of British Columbia. The idea that we would be a world leader. In fact, I checked 2 years later and found that the BC Citizens Assembly website had been accessed by people from more than 150 countries in the world. So the whole world was watching what was going on with this great initiative, the Citizens Assembly. Unfortunately, the defeat of our referendum and also the defeat of the Citizens Assembly referendum in Ontario, this has pretty much put an end to the viability of a Citizens Assembly as a way in which a government could consult the people. Also, very few citizens realize just how thorough the efforts of the Citizens Assembly were, how much material they considered, and indeed how much effort and cost was put into the whole Citizens Assembly initiative. Probably thousands of person years of effort when you count up all of the efforts that were made on all sides. So this was not some small thing. This was an enormous effort with an enormous cost. I think also it's lost on most people just how many complicated issues are associated with the whole thing of voting reform, and it isn't even really just how we vote. It has so many things, that including the relationship between politicians and the citizens and the way campaigns are conducted. Let me now go to a second clip also from the BC Citizens Assembly.
The system we've recommended is really easy for the voter to use. Everyone's very familiar with the idea of expressing preferences. What do they like most? What do they like second most? There are slightly more complicated around the counting process. But what we heard was we have the simplest system in the world, and it was not meeting people's needs. And what they told us was we're willing to take on something slightly more complex in order to get by far superior results, and it's been used successfully around the world. I have no hesitation in saying that British Columbians can handle this.
Now the voters of BC have an opportunity to learn about the recommendations made by the Citizens Assembly and make their own decision. On May 17, 2005, British Columbians will go to the polls in a general election. Included on the ballot will be the referendum question, should British Columbia change to the BC STV electoral system as recommended by the Citizens Assembly on Electoral Reform? Yes or no? This referendum is British Columbians' chance to voice their views. To learn more about the BC STV system, read the Assembly's final report, Making Every Vote Count, the Case for Electoral Reform in British Columbia. Every household in BC will receive a copy in January 2005. It can also be found on our website, www.citizensassembly.bc.ca, along with all sorts of learning resources from fact sheets to videos. Be informed. On May 17th, have your say in BC's future.
So from this clip, the simplicity in terms of what the voter needs to do of simply rank ordering preferences, this is something that was made very confusing by the opponents of electoral reform, but really it is simple. The fact that the vote counting is somewhat more complicated is really not an issue, and it is something that people should understand, that to get a better, fairer system, then some extra degree of complexity is required and a small price to pay for something that delivers better results. Now, also, the fact that in 2005 there were mail-outs to every house, every voter, And this was not done this time. So let me quickly recap the results of the 2005 referendum. It achieved a success rate of 57.8%, narrowly missing the requirement, the arbitrarily high threshold of 60% set by the government. It passed with over 50% in 77 out of 79 ridings. Because it came so close and because effectively the people had clearly rejected in that referendum, they rejected the existing first-past-the-post voting system, it was understood that the people would need to have a second referendum to clarify whether the existing system was acceptable or should be replaced with STV. So that got us up to the second referendum that was first going to be held coincident with the municipal elections following 2005, and that would have been a much better result because at that point the whole issue of STV and the citizens' assembly work was still in people's minds, and it would have allowed the campaigns, both the yes and the no, to build on the momentum they had and to get to a clear resolution. But the government decided to change that in mid-course because of the cost of it, apparently, and they made it the second referendum in the 2009 election. Now, let me fast forward to May 7th of this year, just a couple of weeks back. Let me now play a piece that was broadcast on Global BC TV that frames the issue for the audience of Global BC.
We've all seen the signs about the single transferable vote, but most people still find it somewhat confusing. Sophie Louie has more on STV in tonight's NewsHour Insight. Sophie?
Well, Deb, if it sounds familiar, that's because we've been here before. A referendum was held during the last provincial election on whether to move to the STV system. It came close, but it was narrowly voted down, and now British Columbians are being asked to consider it again. So just what is this single transferable vote, and how could it change voting in BC? Ron Benzie explains.
At the Yes campaign headquarters, volunteers are busy spreading the word. STV proponents say the current first-past-the-post system is broken, pointing to the results of the 1996 election when the NDP formed government, even though the Liberals received more of the popular vote. And in 2001, when the Liberals won 97% of the seats with only 60% of the vote. STV was recommended by the Citizens Assembly on Electoral Reform, a group of 160 citizens who came together in 2004 and asked to reform BC's electoral process.
The single transferable vote is really a great fit for BC. It gives us the effective local representation and the fair results and greater voter choice that we're looking for.
The current system, designed by politicians for politicians.
Proponents say STV does away with the winner-takes-all approach and allows voters to pick as many candidates from as many different parties as they like, ranking them in order of preference. Once a candidate reaches the minimum number of votes to win, then that candidate's alternative votes are then transferred over to other candidates, and according to supporters, ensuring no vote is ever wasted.
A single transferable vote is a system that really puts voters first, and it really balances out the sort of stranglehold that political parties currently have on power. It makes the legislature have a little more voice rather than everything being concentrated in the premier's office.
Did you know, on May 12th, BC votes on a complicated electoral system.
But the no side calls STV confusing, complex, and bizarre. And because of that, it's a system that isn't widely used around the world. Critics point out that STV would create massive ridings of up to 350,000 people each, claiming the system takes away accountable local elected representatives and replacing them with regional MLAs in ridings with as many as 7 members.
When you fractionalize the vote, you only have one vote. You don't get 7 MLAs and 7 votes. You only get one vote. So it's fractionalized or chopped up into a variety of different smaller and smaller fractions. And you may never actually really have any idea where all of your vote went. You won't really know. There's more combinations possible in a 7-member or even a 5-member riding, but the ways you could distribute it with 20 candidates, for example, than there are 649 combinations.
And both sides have their prominent supporters. The yes side includes endorsements from such people as environmentalist David Suzuki and artist Robert Bateman. The no camp includes former premiers Bill Bennett and Dave Barrett.
If this vote passes and we have the new SDV system, we're going to have a radical change in the way we elect our representatives to the legislature. This is a big change. Some of us talk about it as a kind of, in a small c, constitutional change, because it changes the foundations of how we how our representatives' democracy works.
And here are a few extra details about the STV. The number of MLAs would remain the same at 85. There would be fewer but larger ridings determined by population size. Each riding would elect between 2 and 7 MLAs. The STV system is currently used in Northern Ireland, Malta, the Australian Senate, and Scottish municipal elections. And our current first-past-the-post system is used in the UK, the United States, in India, and in the Caribbean.
Let me comment on that previous clip by Global BC. It's, on balance, a very fine piece of journalism that in 4 minutes does a pretty fair job of covering the broad landscape and doing it in a way that tries to be neutral, giving equal voice to each side. But in so doing, it actually does make things very unfair to the yes side by giving credibility to the no side that of sort of an equal weight. For instance, all of the nitpicking arguments of the no campaign were arguments against STV that were well known to the Citizens Assembly and rejected overwhelmingly. They made no mention that the Citizens Assembly recommended STV over the existing system by a margin of 93% to 7%. In raising the issue of some of the notable opponents, including former Premiers Bill Bennett and Dave Barrett, they didn't mention that former Premier Bill Vanderzam is one of the supporters of STV. And in fact, the list of supporters is just incredibly impressive. On balance, it kind of gives a distorted view. They also say that STV is used in small English-speaking countries like Ireland, but first past the post is used by England, Canada, the United States, and India. Well, they didn't mention that the entire non-English speaking world who came into democracy somewhat after England, they all rejected the first past the post system in favor of something else. So even though that it's balanced journalism, in my view, it gave a distorted picture that would be helpful to the no side. Let me now proceed to play the short advertising clip of 30 seconds that was widely aired on television throughout British Columbia in the weeks leading up to the 2009 referendum.
Did you know on May 12th, BC votes on a complicated electoral system, STV, the single transferable vote. STV's giant ridings, each with up to 7 MLAs and 300,000 voters, would remove local accountability of MLAs. The complicated STV system chops votes into fractions. You may never know where your vote went. Vote no to STV. Vote to keep our current first-past-the-post system. On May 12th, STV is not the answer.
Well, of course you expect the no side to have a pitch that is very one-sided. They matched that with some good graphics that I couldn't include in an audio clip. But all in all, it's a great hit job in a 30-second format and raises questions that linger in people's minds. Unfortunately, it's only too easy to poke holes at any system. So to give us an example on this, Ontario went through a similar review of electoral systems for the same reasons 2 years after us. In 2007, Ontario held a referendum, and within the week before the referendum, there was a comedy skit by Rick Mercer, which I'll now play, which shows how easy it is to hold it up to ridicule, well, to get cheap laughs, whether it's legitimate commentary or not.
Hello and welcome to everything you've always wanted to know about electoral reform, but weren't interested enough to ask. In 2005, folks, British Columbia had a provincial referendum on electoral reform. And tomorrow, Ontario goes to the polls and has a referendum on the very same subject. Now, if you didn't know about this because you don't live in Ontario, don't feel bad. Most people in Ontario don't know about it either. But the fact remains, proposed electoral reform is rolling across this country like a low-grade flu. And your province could be next. Now, luckily, electoral reform is very simple. Almost anyone can understand it. Of course, the electoral system used today all over Canada is called First Past the Post, or FPP. Basically, a single winner is chosen in any riding by getting the most votes. It's very old-fashioned. Basically, the person who grabs the largest slice gets to keep the whole pie. Now, usually, of course, someone forms a government without getting the majority of the votes. Now, some people don't like this system. We'll call them the losers, or the crazy people, or the Green Party. And so these people have come up with a very simple solution, a system where the number of seats held by each party reflects the actual number of votes they received. This system is called Mixed Member Proportional, or MMP. Now, under MMP, you'll still get to vote for a candidate, but you'll also get a second vote for the party of your choice. And if that party gets just 3% of the vote, they'll get a seat in the legislature. Now, this is great news for all those parties out there that have some support but never managed to win an actual seat. This way, they can all have a seat. This includes parties like the Communist Party, the Libertarian Party, the Liberation Party, the Librarian Party, the Family Party, the Family Freedom Party, Free the Family Party, and, of course, the Taliban. The other good news is that this system pretty much guarantees there will only be minority governments. And those single-issue parties, if they hold the balance of power, will be able to make the ruling government of the day do whatever they want. Excellent news for the Marijuana Party. Although, to be fair, not everyone wants to see their dealer become the Minister of Education. Because, hey, you think he's hard to get a hold of now? Wait till he's up to his little red eyeballs in committee meetings. Now, in Ontario, the actual wording of the referendum is very straightforward. Which electoral system should Ontario use to elect members to the provincial legislature? The existing electoral system, first past the post, or the alternative electoral system proposed by the Citizens' Assembly, mixed member proportional? Simple, right? Although the question really should be, should we stick with the system we have now, or do we want wingnuts, or rather, different wingnuts running the government? So really, that's what we're voting for. Now, personally, when it comes down to electoral reform, I could go either way. For me, it's like chicken or fish. Depends on my mood. It should be pointed out, though, that the new system will create more seats. And I think we all agree more government can only be a good thing. And obviously, Canadians clearly want change. Why, if I had a dollar for every time a Canadian said, oh, why, oh, why, oh, why, are we sticking with an SMDP MPP selection system when we can have an MMP MPP electoral system? Well, I'd have a dollar. And that is everything you ever wanted to know about electoral reform but weren't interested enough to ask. Happy voting, Ontario.
But weren't interested enough to ask. Yeah, that's good. While Rick Mercer's a good comedian, and if it wasn't that voting reform is something that is so crucial to a functional democracy, then, yeah, it would be pretty funny. But let's point out a few things that came out in that comedy clip. Firstly, the voters of Ontario didn't know about the referendum, just like the voters in BC. And after the referendum, this was something that the Citizens' Assembly accused the Ontario government of failing to provide a proper public information campaign to raise the level of awareness so that people would know about the issues. I think they also blamed the media for not doing their job, too. The question of the voting reform that the Ontario Citizens' Assembly chose, they picked mixed member proportional, partly, I believe, because they felt that from the lesson of BC, that STV was a little bit too complicated and it was a tough sell. So they thought that MMP would be a much easier prospect, and indeed many people in BC felt that same way. But the result was that in Ontario, the referendum went down to an even more crushing defeat. It received only 36.9% of the vote, where in BC the first time around we got 57.8%. So obviously they learned also from BC how to do a better job of scuttling the whole thing. And they did it pretty much through the same negative campaigning means. Now, they also came out in the Rick Mercer comedy skit, the whole notion of multiple goofy parties and possibly even radical parties. Well, the simple facts are that in the countries where these other forms of voting are practiced, they don't really have a problem with multiple goofy parties or radical parties. They do have more parties, but those parties find ways to work together, and those parties do provide a much better representation of the cross-section of the diverse interests of the different populations. The last thing was the question of the referendum question, and that Ontario question, which Rick Mercer boiled down to, which do you prefer, wing nuts or different wing nuts? That's a humorous way to reduce it to something silly. But the way the Ontario referendum was worded was more complicated for the voter to get their brains around than the simple yes-no that the BC referendum in 2005 was. And guess what? With the negative results of the Ontario referendum, our BC government learned from that, and they changed the referendum question this time to also pattern on the Ontario one that's pretty much guaranteed to produce a more negative result, because for people who don't have a large knowledge of it, it's framed in a way that pretty much draws out the negative vote, or rather in this case the vote to stay with what you've got. So with that as background from how it can be made silly, let's get an academic, a political scientist's view of why it's so important. And I've got a clip from Dennis Pilon, who is a political science prof at University of Victoria.
This is a referendum about our democracy. This is not an SDV referendum. The question is not, do you want SDV or not? The question is, which system do you prefer? Do you want the existing system, or do you want SDV? And that means our current system is on trial, just as much as SDV is. And people need to ask themselves, why are we having this exercise in the first place? We're having this exercise because of the wonky election results that we've experienced, right? The 1996 election, where the party with the most votes lost the election, 2001, when one party was dramatically overrepresented, and of course all the elections before that, where people didn't get really what they voted for. That's why we're having this whole referendum in the first place, is because of the failures of our current system. So people need to look closely at what's wrong with our current system, as opposed to what they might think is right. This isn't just about SDV. This referendum is on our democracy. What kind of democracy do we want? People need to take a long, hard look at the kind of regular results that our current system produce and ask themselves, how's it working for you? Do you like the way that things are working right now? Do you like the democracy? Do you like the kind of way our parties behave and our politicians behave? Because if you do, great, vote for our current system. But if you don't, if you think our system's broken, if you're not happy with our parties and our governments, then take very seriously this opportunity for change. Because I can tell you, they don't come along very often.
Let me play now as the next clip something from May 7th on Vancouver CKNW Radio, the popular Christy Clark call-in program. Christy Clark, of course, was formerly deputy premier in the Liberal government of the present premier, Gordon Campbell. And she found new religion when she got out of politics and got into the job of talking with people. Let me allow Christy to explain why SDV was such an important thing.
But first up, let's talk about the single most important vote that you are going to cast when you go to the polls on Tuesday. And I have a confession to make about that. I voted against STV in the last election. I even campaigned against it in the last election. That's the single transferable vote for those of you who haven't been paying rapt attention to politics and have instead been tuned to the Canucks. It was an idea that was spawned by an assembly of nonpartisan everyday citizens. And at the time, I have to say, it didn't appeal to me. At the time, I believed that my vote was right because I liked our first-past-the-post system. Now, of course, looking back, I realized that at the time I liked it because our current system served my personal interests as a politician very well, thank you very much. I was an elected politician. I'd been chosen by the first-past-the-post system. And I, like many of the entrenched interests who are today fighting STV, didn't see a need to change a system that worked very well for me. But since I've been out of politics, my views have changed. Part of it's been due to the fact that I sit here in this chair every single day and I hear from you. And what do I hear when I talk to you about politics? I hear that people are sick to death of the way our political system works. And increasingly, I know that that frustration is borne out in the polls with fewer and fewer young people going to the polls every single year. They just say there's no point in exercising their franchise. A franchise, by the way, that a generation fought and died to protect. They say that there's no point in doing it because their vote doesn't matter. I hear you say that you're sick of seeing your vote being thrown away. You're sick of the fact that if you live in one of the two-thirds of the ridings that are considered safe and you don't choose to vote for the incumbent party, your vote goes in the garbage can. I hear you say that politicians are, you're sick of politicians who ignore their constituents and they do what their leaders and their parties tell them to do instead. You're sick of politicians who attack each other with relentless vitriol that poisons us all, I think, against our entire democratic process. I hear you saying that you're sick of voting for a party even when the person that the party has chosen for you is someone who you think would embarrass you. Now, those are all things that bother you, but I can guarantee you that they are not things that bother the hacks and the backroom boys and the politicians who are currently served and elected by our first-past-the-post system. And when I look at so many of the people who are actively campaigning against STV, that is exactly what I see, including some of the ones you hear regularly here on this station, CKNW. I see people whose interests, and in many cases whose income, is dependent on keeping our system the way it is. People who, unlike you, relish the ugly realities of the first-past-the-post system. And they are scared because STV will change things. It will force politicians to compete for all of your votes. They will be looking to you to be your first choice, but if they don't get it, they want to be your second choice or your third. And in that context, no MLA is safe forever. Every vote will be counted. And we'll stop throwing away over half the votes that we throw away in every election because they're cast in safe seats. Second, politicians will be forced to listen to their communities first and their leaders and their party second. When you vote, you will have several choices to pick from amongst your favorite party. Now, if, for example, you're a committed BC Liberal, wouldn't it be nice to be able to choose the BC Liberal among them who was brave enough to stand up against his or her party to stop that prison or that road from going through your backyard? Wouldn't it be nice to choose the one who actually listened to you between elections? Third, STV will give you choices from among the individuals, and you will get the chance to select the one that you think is the smartest, the one that you think is the most ethical, someone that you think you can respect. How many times have you walked into the polls and found that the political party that you like has foisted a candidate on you who you think's an embarrassment, but you end up voting for them anyway because you like the party that they're with? Well, you can say goodbye to voting for bumblers who are destined to the backbench. With STV, you get a chance to choose the best person. It's not the backroomers who choose it for you. And last, the level of hateful invective will diminish immeasurably. Under STV, all politicians will have an incentive to get along. They'll be hoping to be the second or third choice, as I said, on your ballot. The toxic insults and the nasty rhetoric will be turned down to a lower ebb. Finally, for once, politicians will stop trying to win by ruining each other and start trying to win by acknowledging each other. Now, to me, this is the biggest, most fundamental change that STV could bring about in its civility in politics. If we care about civility in society, we must care about it in politics. So on Tuesday, you will have two choices to make. The first will be a short-term choice. It'll be a choice of who will run our system for the next 4 years. And you will vote for someone who has been chosen for you by the entrenched interests in a big party machine. People who will be accountable to that big party machine, not to you. And perhaps people who will get elected, not because of who they are, but because they have proven to be the best at slinging mud. The other vote that you will cast will be much more important. It will be the vote that determines if the next time you walk into that ballot box, you will be faced with the same ugly choices. Einstein said that insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. We have a chance in this election, perhaps a once-in-a-lifetime chance to do things differently. We have a chance to change our political system and remake it into something we can have some measure of faith in. And if the established interests succeed in defeating this on Tuesday, they will not give you another chance. I hope British Columbians take this chance. This is a chance for real change. I hope that you will join me on Tuesday in voting in favor of the single transferable vote. This is Christy Clark. You're on CKNW News Talk 980.
Well, I think we should all salute Christy Clark as a former politician from a major party, and also the radio station, CKNW. These good folks did raise the flag. They blew the whistle on the smear campaign by the No campaign. They said who was doing it. The primarily people associated with the major parties, especially the back room of the NDP. And they also point out that no government ever wants to give up its power, so this is an extremely unusual situation. And as Christie said at the end, they won't give us another chance. Now, as to the Einstein reference of continuing to do the same old thing and expecting different results, I guess I would say that the BCS campaign were the ones most in need of that lesson, and unfortunately they didn't learn it. Maybe they've learned it now, maybe not. Too bad, so sad, too late. Anyway, let me follow up with some commentary on the election results the day after the election on May 13th. Again, these are clips taken from the Christy Clark program.
Every good campaign is premised on two things, hope and fear. And when you run a better campaign, you get to define the message that people walk in to the polls with. I think that that's what happened.
Now, Christie's comment in that regard applied to not only the referendum, but also the electoral result, which the Liberals retained almost their same position and majority government. But applying also to the No campaign did do a very effective job of campaigning based upon fear, uncertainty and doubt, confusion, and they also were able to define the issue in a way that the Yes campaign could not. So that I think is the basis on which they won. Let me now go to the next clip. All the remaining clips are from that same May 13th Christy Clark program with call-ins.
In this election campaign, I also note that the results were remarkably consistent this time with the election before. Now, you look at all those close races across the province, about half were won by the Liberals, half were run by the NDP, but it was remarkably consistent with what we saw last time. Not a big change. People apparently reasonably happy with the job that Premier Campbell's done, or more importantly, not overly unhappy with the job that he did. Voter turnout, extremely low. People have to be worried about that. It's getting lower all the time. What are we going to do to change that? There is a generation, a couple of generations of voters out there now who just aren't in the habit of voting. Are we going to lower the voting age? Are we going to change our voting system? We have to do something, something different, radically different, if we want to encourage people to get out to vote. Now, of course, that brings me to my disappointment that the single transferable vote didn't pass. I think it was complicated. It was a lot for people to understand. And I think that the No campaign ran a very effective campaign against it. I will say this. I think the irony at the end of this is going to be when we see that it was big labor, it was the unions who likely bankrolled the campaign against STV. Why? Because they believed, I think wrongly, they believed that if we have a single transferable vote and we end up with a system that is more reflective of the way people actually want to vote, what we'll end up with is more conservatives and more liberals, at least when you put them together. And they believe in big labor that they'll never get a shot at running the government again, that they'll never elect another New Democrat. They'd rather have their 7 to 15 years in the wilderness than none at all. That's their analysis of this. And the irony of it, to me, is that when we see the results of who voted how, I bet you we are going to see it wasn't New Democrat voters and union voters that actually defeated this. It was right-wing voters. It was BC Liberal voters who voted against electoral reform. And when you look across the ridings at where it did the worst, it tended to be ridings where Liberals did extremely well. So here you've got organized labor bankrolling a campaign that's run and organized by New Democrats that's persuaded BC Liberals that they shouldn't change the electoral system. Now that's an irony for you.
Christy Clark's intuition that the No campaign that was largely led by backroom boys from the NDP party had actually more impact on Liberal voters appears to have some substance to it. In the ridings that the Liberals won, BCSTV received only 36% support, which was 5% less than they received in the ridings that the NDP won. I guess a No campaign has impact on everyone. The major results of the election being so similar to the previous election are very striking. Both the NDP and the Liberals gained about 0.5% vote, while the Green Party declined by 1% from 9% down to 8%, and the Green Party was again shut out. The most striking changes in the election results were that the turnout was only 52.5% this year, which was almost 10% less than it was 4 years ago. And the concern about the low turnout in the 18 to 24 year group, we don't know what the number is this year, but it's probably even less than the 35% that was the case in 2005. Then, of course, there was the huge change in the result of the referendum, the STV, where it went down from almost 58% support to just about 39% support. And that we'll be looking at through the rest of this program.
Christy, I just have a few things. I worked at one of the polls, and what amazed me is a lot of people had no information on the STV. Some people actually called it STD.
Now, the fact that there was such a broad lack of understanding is no surprise. That was the main strategy of the No campaign, to have the whole awareness be the lowest possible and to have people confused with what they did here. The whole notion of STV as a poor choice of names, well, it's a sad commentary, but when people are so ignorant of the importance of a voting system, then they can latch on to something crazy like that as a way to ridicule it. I'll go to the next clip.
Good afternoon. I was disappointed that the STV failed. I'm astonished that so many British Columbians figure that they're too stupid to figure it out. I always thought we were a pretty bright province, but I guess I was wrong.
The notion by many of the people who were supporters that they were let down by their fellow citizens and that they must have been too stupid, it reminds me of something my father said many times when I was young, and he said, the people are always wrong. I argued with my father on that and many other things, but what I've come to understand is that there's good reasons why the people are usually misled, and when you understand how the No campaign operated, it's easy to understand how people could be confused, and even the whole negativity of it, was something that is a turnoff. So yeah, the people blew it, but they sure had a lot of help to get the wrong answer. Let me go to the next clip.
I'm an NDPer, but I didn't vote for the STV, not at all. The reason is that last caller, he was saying that we're all too stupid. I've had a half a dozen people on the radio try to explain it to us. Halfway through it, I'm lost. And then I started talking to my friends and my neighbors, and everyone's got the same problem. So basically, if it's that difficult to follow and understand, let's just stick with the old process until you come up with something a little more simple.
Well, does it have to be easy to understand in order to work? I mean, shouldn't we be worried about the outcome? Americans don't understand how the Electoral College system works. I can guarantee you that. Academy Award voters don't know how the Academy Awards get selected.
Hey, well, look, at number one, we're not talking about TV here. We're talking about our country. My point is this, is that it seems to be working fine the way it is.
Okay.
Now, if you come up with a better idea, that's fantastic. I'm always open-minded to that. But what they're talking about, I try to understand it. I try to follow it. And it just depends on who's telling you. The people that want you to vote for it, they make it sound so simple. But then the person who doesn't want you to vote for it, they come up with some other kind of antidote towards it.
I agree. I think that the back and forth in the campaign was very confusing for people. But here's the argument that I would make. We shouldn't choose the current system because the other system is too hard to understand. We should base our decision about what kind of electoral system we want based on the outcome that it delivers for us. And Robert, if you're perfectly happy with the system that we have now, I think that's a good argument to not change it. But if your argument is, well, gee, the other system's too complicated, I think that's a lousy argument.
Unfortunately, many voters got stuck on that. And of course, the No campaign was designed explicitly to make them get stuck on that. Let's go to the next clip.
Hi, Christy. I got some suggestions for you on getting more people out to vote.
Go for it.
A lot of people I talked to don't like negative ads, and they simply didn't vote, or some didn't vote for the people that they felt were putting out the most negative ads. And as for STV, I mean, in the last time we had this up, they said they were going to start right away telling people about it, so in the next election, everybody would be informed. Well, I didn't hear anything about it until last year when people were starting to talk about election. All of a sudden, STV came up, and people were starting to talk about it again. They had 3 years there where they could have been out educating, putting things out, and I mean, just subtly, not even big meetings, you know, like commercials or whatever. And I just didn't see that happening.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's expensive to do that stuff, but I think you're right. There could have been a lot more public education about all this stuff. And I also agree with you about negative ads. And I want to note this too, because you've made a really good point, Richard. Negative ads do depress voter turnout. And the reality is that the established political parties do not care about that. They don't care about voter turnout. They only care about whether or not they win. And if they have to get, if it helps them to get voter turnout down to 40%, if it means that they will get a larger proportion of the vote, if only 40% of the people vote, they will work hard to depress voter turnout. That's the way the system works. It's terrible. It's absolutely appalling.
Well, that caller made a number of points, but I'll comment on the Yes campaign that really did nothing in the 4 years. That was a great failure. The other comments there about negative advertising and negative campaigning and voter turnout, of course, the reason that negative campaigning is practiced and practiced by every major party is because it works. They wouldn't do it if it hurt them. They find they have to do it to compete. So that's why they do it. That's what the No campaign did. That's what the Yes campaign refused to do. No campaign won, Yes campaign lost. Too bad. We'll go to the next track.
What happened out there? Well, let's leave some of the analysis to the experts. Mike McDonald is a senior research associate with the Innovative Research Group, and he's been analyzing this election as well as polling throughout. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Christy.
Now, Mike, popular vote, how did the parties do? Did any of that surprise you?
Well, it was a remarkably consistent election. The popular vote is almost identical to the last election where it ended, where the Liberals got 46%, the NDP have come in about 42%. So the seats haven't changed much. The NDP have gained a couple of seats, the Liberals gained four seats. We're right back to where we started from.
And the Greens?
Well, the Greens failed to make an impact again. They really weren't in the ballgame at all this time. There was, in previous elections, Adrian Carr was seen to have a bit of a shot at winning her seat on the Sunshine Coast, but there was no realistic prospect of victory this time for a Green candidate.
And why was that? Is it because the Liberals stole their central campaign plank?
No, I think we're in an era of polarized politics again. And that means a couple of things. It makes it very hard for a third party to come in and win seats, but it also makes it tough for the NDP to win. The NDP are not good at winning two-way races in British Columbia. The only time they ever have won government is when there's been a third party splitting the vote. So for the NDP, it's not that they can't win in a two-way race. It's just a little bit tougher for them than the free enterprise alternative, which is obviously the BC Liberals.
The importance of a third party in splitting the vote is very noteworthy. And in fact, the Green Party, as the third party presently in BC, they scored only 8.1%. But given that the margin between the NDP and the Liberals was 4%, then that's a significant amount. It could have made a decisive difference. I could also see that if the NDP ever formed government, and if the Green Party has never been able to elect somebody, and as long as they're bottom feeding around 8%, then I could imagine that a future NDP government might exclude the Green Party from the leaders' debate because they would be concerned that giving them airtime would cost them votes. And, of course, I think you can also understand that the reason that the Liberals are now happy to have the Green Party there, even though they're non-factors, is that they reckon that they siphon some amount of the vote away from the opposition NDP. The wrap-up on this program I would like to present as the murder on the Electoral Reform Express. It did seem, when we got started in 2004 in BC on electoral reform, that there was a burgeoning movement. Four other provinces were looking at it, and if any of us had been able to succeed, then surely the federal government would have had to look at it. And if Canada had done this, there'd be a good chance that other countries in the English-speaking world would have followed our good example. Like in the Agatha Christie novel, The Murder on the Orient Express, there are many parties who are guilty of being party to this crime against democracy. And let me summarize those who bear some guilt on this whole thing. The BC government was devious in changing the referendum question in 2009, following the example of Ontario, which achieved such a stunning rejection of their referendum in 2007. They changed the electoral question away from the simple yes-no of the first 2005 referendum in BC into one that made it much more likely that the unaware, confused voter would select the first past the post. The second point I would say is the failure of the BC government to provide an adequate public information campaign, followed by the failure of the official opposition to blow the whistle on the government's failure to provide an adequate public information campaign. And then there's the failure of the media to provide adequate coverage and to blow the whistle on the major parties for providing an inadequate public information campaign. Then there's the failure of the Green Party to blow the whistle on the failures of the major parties in keeping people in the dark on this thing. Then, of course, there was the stealth campaign of the no side that was covertly staffed by people who were in prominent positions, former party hacks from the major parties, and their whole strategy was to spread fear, uncertainty, and doubt regarding STV, which was an easy job, even though all of their arguments had been totally rejected by the BC Citizens Assembly. Then there was the failure of the Yes campaign to organize between 2005 and 2009. There was the failure of the Yes campaign to push the issue in 2005 of the democratic legitimacy of another election with first past the post. And there was the overconfidence of the Yes campaign following their near victory in 2005. There was the failure of the Yes campaign to learn the lessons from 2005, and there was their failure of the Yes campaign to allow the No campaign to frame the issue on the question, do you understand STV, and nitpicking arguments that were, as I said before, all rejected by the BC Citizens Assembly. There was the failure of the Yes campaign to frame the issues on the trust in the objectivity and collective wisdom of the British Columbia Citizens Assembly and the enormous number of highly reputable supporters and the proven disastrous consequences of first past the post. So there were many ways the Yes campaign could have run a much stronger campaign. There was the failure of the Yes campaign to learn the lessons from the defeat of the Ontario 2007 referendum. And then, of course, there is the failure of voters to understand what was going on, and that's largely due to ignorance and apathy. There were so many ordinary citizens, probably a large majority, that didn't take the time to learn about BCSTV and the reasons why voting reform would be important to them. They totally ignored the work of the BC Citizens Assembly. They even ignored the two-minute video clips that showed how STV worked, which can be found on YouTube, the BC Citizens Assembly, and both the Yes and No websites. So all it takes is a two-minute video where the picture worth a thousand words makes it very clear, and people have no excuse for saying it's too confusing, we don't understand. All that information was readily accessible to them, would only take 2 minutes of their time. And then they allowed themselves to be duped by the No campaign into believing that if they didn't understand STV, even though they made hardly any effort to do so, then there must be something wrong with STV if people who didn't take the time to learn about it didn't understand it. Now, the crushing defeat of mixed member proportional in Ontario and single transfer vote electoral reforms in BC have effectively immunized the political duopolies, that is, the dominant power structure of the two-party system, which is itself a creature of the first-past-the-post voting system. And it has immunized the Anglo-American world for at least 25 to 50 years against any further electoral reform initiatives. So our conclusion is this. The only hope now is for the people to form some new multinational political movement of positive protest without policy baggage to advance the cause of none of the above, aimed at the disaffected majority, with the promise of a broad range of initiatives to achieve genuine democracy for the first time in history. And this is something that we will be working on ourselves and presenting in some detail in future programs. So that's it. That's a wrap for BCSTV for this program. Again, I'm Jeff Jewell, signing off for the Monday Brown Bagger, and we'll go out with our song by Mary Hopkins.
Those were the days, my friend. Stop me.